Welcome to Business Amplified with host Kevin A. Dunlap.
This podcast is for small business owners aiming to amplify their enterprises.
Explore strategies to play a bigger game by becoming an author, public speaker, podcast host, or expanding your brand in other ways.
Elevate your business on Business Amplified.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Business Amplified. Today, I've got a guest. He's our first international guest that we've had on the show. He's from right across the pond, or the big pond, as we often call it. He's coming in from Oxford, England, or in the United Kingdom. So his name is Duncan. Duncan, welcome to our show today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm pleased to join you. I'm excited to have a bit of a chat.
Well, same here. And I've had a podcast before. It was called Life's Little Lessons back in 2017 and 18. And we had a few people. One person was actually from, Cambridgeshire, and the other one was from Oxford. So I'm glad to be going back over to the UK. I love your guys' accent. I love the way you guys say things. So Duncan, tell us a little bit about who you are, what is it that you do, and why is it that you do it?
Who you are? I mean, start in with a deep philosophical question. So I guess the quick answer to that is I am a speaker, an author, and a Morris dancer. What's the long answer to it? I don't know. I mean, I guess I like to have fun. I like to tear down false beliefs, and I like to wear really, really good shoes. Those are sort of the things that I try and do in life. I'm also, a son, a husband, and a father, and that takes up an awful lot of my time. And that's very meaningful and important, but I have less kind of like goals and vision statements for my family than I do for my business stuff. So what do I do? Well, in one respect, I help people to get sober. In another respect, I help them to start living. I do a lot of one-to-one work with people. We help them to stop drinking, and then we look at the kind of the broader life around that and what they want to go on to do and achieve with their newfound sobriety, which is very, very exciting. That's the one-to-one stuff. Also do some stuff with businesses and organizations, which is more and more of what we're doing these days, is going into small, medium, big businesses who have got an existing wellbeing program. And we go in and we add the alcohol awareness element to their existing wellbeing program, because what I've found is that very few companies actually have any input about alcohol and how to rebalance your relationship with alcohol in their wellbeing program. So that's what I do. Why do I do it? Well, you probably know what's coming here. You know, I drank very heavily for a long time. I didn't look after myself. I didn't look after the people around me. I certainly didn't do anything in terms of actually creating a meaningful way of making some money and building some meaning and purpose into my everyday. And when I stopped drinking, I found I had a lot more energy. I had a lot more focus. I had a lot more time. I had a lot more vitality. I had a lot more ability to concentrate. I had all of the kind of stuff that most people in business would absolutely die for. So that's why we're really committed to working with businesses to give their employees more time, more energy, more focus, more calm, more peace, more joy, more happiness, better moods, all of the good stuff. And you know what? I mean, I get so much satisfaction from doing that. So I jump out of bed in the morning.
So let me ask you this, because you say you drank for a while. Now you help people and their wellness, as well as, you know, getting past alcohol. I'm assuming you work with people that maybe have a drug addiction as well.
So I don't work a huge amount with people who have drug addictions. I have done, I think it's the same underlying mechanisms that drive us to any of these behaviors. I work a lot more with people who smoke, which is a drug addiction, as is alcohol, but we probably wouldn't really call it that. But I mean, what sits underneath it all is these kind of false beliefs that we have around our behaviors. And that's the kind of thing that I unpick with people. So, you know what? It doesn't matter what you're addicted to. If you gamble, spend too much money shopping online or offline, if you spend too much time on Facebook, if you're you know, addicted to gaming, whatever kind of avoidance of life you want to kind of put your time and effort into, it all comes down to the same basic mechanisms. And that's what I help people do. Unpick their beliefs around these activities.
It's kind of funny that you talk about those kinds of addictions. Currently, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I've been here for about 2 years. But for the 18 years before that, I lived in a town. Most people in the world have heard of this town. And it's a town all about excess. It's a little, I always call it a little town out west called Las Vegas, Nevada. So the thing with Las Vegas, and I said this because I lived there for 18 years, the thing about Las Vegas, if you have any kind of an addiction problem, Las Vegas is the city that you should not be in. And I jokingly said there was four main things, and I'm mainly looking at this from a man's perspective. There's four main addictions that men tend to have in Las Vegas. One is drugs. Number two is alcohol. And guess what? You're giving free alcohol when you're gambling. Number three is going to be gaming because it's everywhere. I mean, if you want to go play poker on the one-armed bandits kind of machines, you could do that at your local convenience store or your local grocery store or your local Walmart. They all have gambling there. And the fourth addiction that Vegas is known for is women. So prostitution, the whole sex business is there. Now, yeah. All joking aside, what got you to realize that you wanted to give up alcohol? Just out of curiosity.
In a remarkable twist of fate, I am actually going to stick up for Las Vegas just before I answer that question, because you might not think it's my kind of town, but hey, they know how to put on a Super Bowl, don't they? That was a cracking game. So, fair enough. I will let Las Vegas off just for the football, just for the moment. So what stopped me drinking? That's a very, very good question. So at this point, I'm supposed to give you the 4 a.m. staring in the mirror kind of revelatory story that we're so familiar with in these kind of narratives. But do you know what? I don't think it really works like that. My stopping drinking for me was part of a longer process of changing my life, involving stopping smoking and changing the way I ate and changing my approach to my health. I mean, if there was one thing that really kind of hammered it home for me, it was to do with my relationship with my wife. We were trying to start a family, and that's always kind of a bit of an emotional roller coaster, isn't it? It's always something that puts a bit of strain onto a relationship. And then she had a miscarriage, which was enormously difficult for her, and she needed me. And I genuinely wasn't there for her. I didn't know how to deal with that emotional pain and that stress and that difficulty. So I did the only thing that I really knew how to do, which was, of course, climb into the bottle. And that didn't help. I mean, pretty much did the opposite, didn't it? So I got to a point, and I never stood in front of the mirror and asked myself this question, but I look back on it now and I see I was kind of at a point in my life where I was making that decision. You know, what do I want from life? Do I want to have a family, or do I want to have another drink?
And then do you have, like, obviously you have a process. If you're working with a medium to large company and you have some of their employees, which may be, you know, drunks or alcoholics, how does the process begin? I mean, obviously the person has to want to have a conscious decision to stop or to change their relationship with alcohol. Is there a process that you begin with these companies or their employees?
Yeah, so we tend to start by doing some kind of educational pieces around simply raising awareness of alcohol and the impacts that it can have at relatively modest levels. So, for example, a couple of drinks is usually enough to raise your cortisol levels by about 18%, which is, of course, going to contribute towards your stress. And those couple of drinks are also going to impair your ability to sleep. They're going to affect your REM sleep, which is the most important part. They're going to reduce the quality of your sleep by something like 24%. And that is just a couple of drinks, the kind of thing that we would have with dinner without even really thinking about it. So we start off by doing this kind of like educational stuff around alcohol and performance and alcohol and culture to get people more aware of it. Then we run a diagnostic test that we've been using for a little while. It's a very robust test. It's been well proven across cultures over the last 30 years that it's been in use. Not by me, I hasten to add, but it is a very robust test. And that puts people into one of four groups, either the low risk group, and we always like to talk to everybody who, as they're taking the test. So if you're in the low risk group, we say, well done. Congratulations, carry on. If you're in the moderate risk group, we just do a little bit of input about what actual low risk drinking looks like, how maybe you could use a few little tips and tricks just to get yourself back down to there, and other kind of coaching techniques that we use. Then there's moderate to severe, and that's when we start to use all of those coaching skills, which are really about getting to grips with what is the belief that underlines the activity. You know, what do you really want from life? What are your aims and your objectives? And is your drinking getting in the way of that? And then kind of coming up with a sort of a plan about how you can get either your drinking back to that low, safe level, or maybe whether you could consider sobriety, whether that's the right thing for you. Or sometimes it's a mixture of the two, where we do a kind of reset method where you take a pause and then moderate your drinking. And then if you pitch up in that particularly heavy drinking phase, it's basically the same thing. You know, we get to grips with your beliefs. And then once you've got your beliefs under control, once you've started to realize where alcohol actually sits, you know, you probably believe it helps you deal with stress. But once you understand that it's probably the primary cause of stress in your life, then we do a little bit about thought management, which helps people to kind of manage the cravings or the thoughts around it. And then once you've done all of that, honestly, the action's the easy bit. You know, the not drinking is actually the easy bit because you've done all of the work. The problem that we find is most people try and do it the other way around. They try and stop the actions and they hope the thoughts and the beliefs are going to catch up, but they rarely ever do.
Okay, yeah, because I remember in my second book, this is something I learned from personal development, and maybe you're saying this, but just in a different way, is that they believe in the whole concept of do, have, be. So they take an action to have what they want, to be satisfied or to say be happy. However, in personal growth, it's be, do, have. You have to be that way first. Then you take the next other action. Then you actually have that result. And it's a backwards way, or it's a reverse way of thinking. So is that the same thing that you're kind of talking about through your wellness programs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you've come across things like the logical levels of change and things like that. And, you know, the models like that are very much about getting to grips with the identity and working out who you are. Because I get this an awful lot, that people, when we talk and when we kind of dig that's brilliant. You should put that on a t-shirt, my friend. I'm a runner, not a drinker. And that's kind of like, that's who they see themselves as. And particularly, I get this a lot with successful business people, that they see themselves as a leader. And then they look at their behaviors around alcohol. And that really, that clashes with who they think they are, who they want to be. So getting to grips and reaffirming that core thing about them and realizing that that is who they are, and that this behavior is around alcohol, that's not really who they are. That's not an important part of their identity. Problem is that society is so keen to tell you all of the great benefits of drinking that we believe that it is who we are, and that we can't function and we can't enjoy ourselves and we can't socialize, we'd be boring if we stopped drinking, all of that kind of stuff. So that piece around identity, I think it's so important to help people realize what's really important about who they are and how these are simply behaviors that are just getting in the way.
Now, do you mainly only work with people in the UK, or do you work with people outside that area as well?
So it depends. If you like Zoom, then I can work with anybody anywhere. If you want me to come face to face, obviously, I will come and do one-to-one coaching sessions with you anywhere in America. It's just going to be quite expensive, isn't it? But yeah, no, I work with a lot of people worldwide. I work with a lot of Americans because the time difference is pretty nice. What I work a few evenings, and that allows me to take a few afternoons off, which allows me to spend more time with my daughter. So it all works itself out nicely.
Do you see kind of cultural differences? Like, say, are people in the UK or people from Russia or people, say, from Greece, they have alcohol is more part of society, is more acceptable than it is in other cultures? Do you see that? And is that a problem that you have to try to overcome as well?
So globally, if we look at the world, then from sort of Pakistan across through the Middle East, across North Africa, then like less than 5% of people in that region drink. So globally, that's pretty different. Africa, the average for sub-Saharan Africa tends to be only about 32, 33% of people drink. Asia, it tends to be more around 50, 50 to 60%, depending on which part. India, there's a lot less drinking. China, there's a bit more. So globally, there is a lot of variation in the levels of people that drink. But anywhere that tends to be, I don't want to say European, because obviously in America, you don't think you're European. But what I mean by that is, like, in the day, a bunch of white people from Europe came over and sort of like set up a bit of a country where you live now. If that sounds like you, so South America, North America, Australia, and Europe, then you will find that it's more like 80% of people that drink. So culturally, there is a lot of difference. I tend to work with people who live in the English-speaking world because I tell you what, my Chinese is not that good. So I tend to work with English speaking people, and they tend to have a similar sort of attitude towards alcohol, which is everybody does it and you should drink lots of it. So yeah, I mean, there are variations. I imagine if you look at the states in America, there will be variations in the amount of people that drink. My good friend RJ always says, in Wisconsin, it's not that drinking is part of the culture. It is that drinking is the culture. So I don't know statistically how correct he is, but yeah, I mean, there is little variations, but in general, alcohol is pretty pervasive in any part of the world where they speak English or Spanish as their first language.
And I've heard, I don't know how true this is, but if we're just looking at the United States as an example, I think I've heard that the per capita, the people who drink, that the state that has the most percentage of people that drink is in Alaska.
Yeah, yes. I'm not going to make a really terrible joke about long winter nights, but that does not surprise me very much. I expect. Are there a lot of people that go and work in Alaska and don't live there and come back a lot? Because that's something that's very highly correlated with problem drinking as well. People being away from home for extended periods of time.
A TV show that I used to be really fond of was called a Deadliest Catch, which is in the Aleutian Islands, which is that strain of islands off of Alaska. But they usually are coming out of, say, the state of Washington or possibly even the state of Oregon. And but they're at sea for, like, 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah,
So I don't
so
know if that,
your
but for the
merchant
rest of the
seamen are one
states,
of
what's
merchant seamen are one of the people that the World Health Organization recommend are screened annually for alcohol use. They're one of the high risk categories. The one that every surprises everybody an awful lot in terms of high risk categories that should be screened annually is business executives, because alcohol is a bit of a problem of success.
Wow. Okay. And I see you've got, so for those of you that are on the YouTube channel, you'll see over Duncan's right shoulder, he's got two books prominently displayed. For those of you that are on on the podcast, he's got two books. Could you tell me a little bit about those two books?
Yeah, so my most recent book is called Real Men Quit, which I wrote because there are a lot of amazing women in the sober space talking about getting past alcohol, and I love their work, but there aren't so many like doing it, which is a bit of an issue because men are more likely to have a problem with drinking. They're also less likely to seek help. which is why I wrote that. And then the other one is called Get Over Indulgence, which is sort of, I like to think of it as a self-help novella because I'm very pretentious, but it is just my story of how I got past alcohol and junk food. And if your listeners would like a copy of it, if you just put getover.uk into the internet, then it'll take you to a bit of my website. You can download it on Kindle or PDF. You can also listen to the audio there. If you can stomach listening to me doing silly voices for 2 hours and 45 minutes, you can listen to the audio. That's entirely free. That is a gift for your listeners. If they just put getover.uk into the internet, they will find that.
Okay, so those of you out there, go to getover.uk to get his audiobook. And that was your Get Over Indulgence book?
Yes, yeah. That was my first / third book, depending on whether you count the ones about local government that aren't particularly interesting.
One of the things I talk about, and the whole, one of the big reasons I have this podcast, is I tell people for them to grow their businesses, they have to be willing to step outside of their comfort zone and do something different. And one of the things I talk about is becoming an author. Now, not only are you an author, but you're also an author with an audiobook where it's read by the author.
Yeah. I'm a speaker as well, and I would. It seems a bit odd. I occasionally come across speakers who don't read their own audiobooks. And I'm like, well, I mean, to be fair, it is a pain. It's like really annoying reading an audiobook. Yeah. But I think it's good because at the end of the day, I get a bit confused now when I listen to some people because I like Tim Ferriss. He's got a podcast, but he doesn't read his own audiobook. So when you listen to his podcast, he doesn't sound like himself. Because I think of the guy who does his audiobooks as being him. So it's all a bit confusing. I would definitely recommend people reading their own audiobooks. It's a pain. It's a bit of a skill. I'm not very good at silly voices. I've got enormous respect for the actors that do the fiction stuff, and they can just drop in and out of the accents very, very quickly. But if you've written a business book, the chances are you're not going to need to sound like Monty Python, are you? So so give it a go.
Well, and the thing is, going by the time of this recording, there's so much AI out there, artificial intelligence, that there are sites right now that you can go to and upload your voice to the site, and then you can give it a PDF, like say a chapter in your book, and it will read that chapter for you in your voice. And that's just some incredible technology out there right now. So,
and just in case people are listening to the podcast, I want to make it's really, really clear. Kevin is real. It's not an AI version of him. He is really sitting here talking to me.
I'm really just not a computer talking to Duncan right now. But the thing is, I mean, I fully agree. I attempted to do my second book into an audiobook, and this was probably 2018, so it was a few years ago, because that book came out in 2016, and I remember getting my laptop, going into the master closet, get as much clothing around me as possible, sitting on the floor, on the carpet floor, to minimize any echo. And it had the clothes around me to absorb any sound, so I'm not echoing off the walls. And I started started reading my book, and I do remember that was a painful thing to do. Let's put it that way, because I just want to keep this thing clean.
Yeah. So I spent, I don't know, probably less than $100 on buying some like audio blankets, which hang up very nicely, so I can create a little audio booth in my home, which means I didn't have to hide in the closet to do it. So that would be my top tip. Go get some soundproof blankets which have got nice big eyelets in them, and then you can hang them up, and you can create that kind of echo-free booth yourself with without the pain and suffering of hanging duvets and coats and so forth.
I had a lady friend of mine back in Vegas, and this was probably like even 2009. It was quite a few years ago. And she was a voiceover speaker. And she did all kinds of audio recordings as well. And I actually even had her back then. I don't know why I needed it at that time, but I did. I needed somebody to be my voice to my multi-stage voicemail system. Press one for press two for the to shoot. And the way that she did it, she got for her, she got blankets. Now, she was a professional. And I don't know what you guys call it over there in the UK, but in here it was called a coat closet. So it's a closet by your front door where you hang your coats. And she made that into her audio booth. So she just closed the door, had a light in there. I mean, it was, you know, it was maybe, let's talk it, 2 feet wide, or let's say 3 feet wide, a meter wide. And the depth was the width of a coat. And she just took all the stuff in this, and that became her recording studio. But she had the sound blankets and everything was condensed, and she could just close the door, and her studio's door is closed. So that's what worked for her.
Probably a bit over the top if you're going to spend a week recording an audio book, but
So Duncan, tell me a little bit about some of the challenges that you went through as you've been trying to build this business, and how did you overcome them as well?
Oh, well, I mean, that's the great thing about business. You know, the challenges never really go away, do they? They just get bigger and they just get harder. And I often think that actually, you know, the level of the challenges, that's what shows you that you're doing the right thing. If you're kind of like scared walking into a meeting because you're about to discuss something that's, you know, like worth tens of thousands of pounds rather than, you know, what normally talk about hundreds of pounds, you know, that's the kind of challenges that we like, isn't it? That's when you know that you're on the right track, because the challenges are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that's what really separates successful people from the rest of the world. And that goes for sobriety as much as it goes for business. The people I've met who have been really, truly successful, they just want bigger challenges. They aren't happy with just the everyday challenge of getting up and earning a bit of money and trying to cook dinner in the evening and why is my toilet leaking? You know, they want the big challenges. And absolutely. I like, can I have some bigger challenges, please? That has become my attitude since I stopped drinking.
Well, and I'm glad that you said that, because that is so true. I remember back when I lived in Las Vegas, I ran a real estate consultation business, which I connected owners of homes with a lease option or rent to own a tenant buyer that was moving into their home. And I remember, like, I used to have some of these challenges, like, gosh, I'm just getting so many damn phone calls, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just going over this, like, I'm complaining about being successful. I really need to change my attitude about this, because I'm obviously attracting the right people, and I'm complaining about being too busy. Like, would I rather be not busy and not making any money?
The famous jazz man, who's so famous I can't even remember his name, who said that a life without problems is a life without life. And I think a business without challenges is a business without business, right?
I think somebody said that if you want to get rid of all of your challenges, that's when they are nailing your coffin close. I mean, it's because that's what makes life interesting.
If you get down to it, my daughter is a challenge. But would I rather have that challenge, or would I rather get rid of her, which would just be a different form of challenge, wouldn't it? You know, you've just swapped the problem, haven't you? You've swapped the problem from, like, gosh, I'm late to pick her up from school, to, you know, why am I miserable all of the time? It's just, you got to pick your challenges, haven't you?
Yeah, that I would agree. And the thing is, I mean, life is what makes life worth living are the challenges, are the obstacles, or otherwise you're just coasting by, and then you're just drifting. You're just not doing anything. So Duncan, what's the best way for somebody that may have an alcohol issue or other kind of a issue, or maybe they're also want to find out more about writing a book or even creating an audio book? What is the best way for them to get a hold of you?
So if you can spell Bhaskar M. Brown, I am really, really easy to find. Of course, no one can spell Bhaskar M. Brown. So I suggest if you just either if you put in Real Men Quit, which is the name of my most recent book. That'll take you to Amazon, which will show you how to spell my name. Or you can just put getover.uk into the internet. That will take you to this bit of my website. Get yourself a copy of Get Over Indulgence. Or you can find all of my socials are on there. I do a lot of work on LinkedIn, Instagram and Facebook. We're also pretty busy on YouTube. So, you know, connect. I am always happy to talk. Whatever you want to talk about, I love writing. I absolutely adore writing. So if you want to talk about writing, I'm happy to talk about writing. I also am very, very committed on ending the harm that alcohol does in the world. So if I can help you with that, I would also be delighted to chat to you.
You mentioned Real Men Quit. Is that realmenquit.uk or realmenquit.com? Or?
Well, actually, realmenqu.it is one of our web addresses that is just too clever for me to ever really mention that much. But if you just put Real Men Quit into Google, it will take you to Amazon. It might take you to a few other booksellers as well, but that will at least give you a fighting chance on spelling Bhaskaran Brown.
And I was wondering how to spell that or how to pronounce that when I saw that you made this reservation. Well, Duncan, I do want to say I do appreciate you for being on the show today. Are there any last words that you would like to share with anybody or any nuggets that you would like to share with anybody, either about sobriety or about business?
Yeah, do you know, the one message I would love to get out more into the world is to help people to realize that they are enough. You know, that you have everything inside you need to live a happy and fulfilling life. You don't need alcohol. You don't need cigarettes. You don't need junk food because you are enough. And that goes double for running a business. You know, you really do genuinely have everything inside you that you need to be successful. Sometimes we need a little bit of help getting out of our own way. And, you know, it is the things that we do that we think are going to help us deal with stress, like alcohol, cigarettes, junk food. Those are the things that you need to get out of your way. And then you will discover that you have everything inside you that you need to really, really be a successful businessman.
Well, Duncan, thank you for sharing some of those great little tidbits there. And for those of you that are on the show and you feel like you have a message you want to get out, go ahead and give us a call or contact us for a 15-minute pre-interview. Maybe we would find out if that's something that we can do. And you can just go to businessamplified.net/pre-interview. That will set up a 15-minute call. And maybe you can be a guest on our show as well. Well, anyway, Duncan, again, I do want to say thank you for joining us today. I think you guys gave us some great information. Also, the whole thing is, you know, becoming a speaker, getting your message out there. He's talking about being on YouTube. So that's, you know, one of the biggest things that I've seen over the last, I would say almost two decades, is the fact that people are afraid to get their image out into the world. And I will tell you something, I don't care what your business is. One of the things that's going to be part of your brand is your face and your voice. I mean, I cannot say that enough. I mean, in 2009, I ended up winning a small pocket-sized camcorder, and I started shooting YouTube videos back then. And the thing is, my face became my brand, and your face is going to be your brand. And you know what? Hey, Duncan, I'm going to ask you this one question. When you are, and I have no idea what your YouTube videos, you know, what the content is, but when you're creating your YouTube videos, do you ever do a second take?
Oh, yes, I did some this afternoon, actually. I recorded 8 and probably 5 of them I did in one take. 3 of them I just completely and utterly stuffed up one of the lines, so I stopped halfway through. But yeah, generally, I try and do them in one go. I mean, I have 2 fairly big advantages. One, I write pretty short videos, and 2, I did a lot of acting back in the day, so I feel a bit
of experience
on camera. Yeah. So, but at the end of the bend, it is just a muscle. You just have to train it. You just have to put your face in front of the camera and see what happens.
And the thing is, it is okay to mess up because guess what? Take two, they're not, if you do a take two and a take three, nobody's going to see that take one. It's going to
Oh, no,
end, it's going
they
to
have
go in,
all.
into the ethos.
Yeah, those three, maybe it was four that I stuffed up earlier, they're already in the bin. Not even my assistant who don't edits them all. She doesn't even see those.
So the thing is, my whole thing is to get out there and start doing something. That to me is the most important thing. I know when I started shooting videos, I mean, even after 10 years of shooting YouTube videos for houses, I probably had 500 or 600 videos. I was still messing up. I'd
Oh,
be saying,
yeah.
hey, today we're at 123 Main Street. This is okay, located over on Jones and Alexander. It's at 3,000. How many square foot is that again? Okay,
But
now, today we're at.
the real truth about that is that, like, we're so paranoid and worried that we're going to say something stupid, or we're going to mess something up, or we're going to get something wrong, that we don't do it. And actually, if you mess things up, it proves that you're human. And do you know what? People like humans. They much prefer them to AIs. So if you're waiting to get perfect, one, you're chasing the wrong thing. But two, you know, just go out there, be human. People love humans.
Well, one last thing that I'm going to say, I know I've said this on a couple of the other shows, is back when I lived in Vegas, I used to take a lot of hot yoga classes. And one of the things I forget which yoga instructor said this, and I think I've heard a couple of other yoga instructors say this. And after she said it, like, oh my gosh, you're so right. And she goes, okay, you guys, this is at the end of the classes. And she was like, okay, guys, now remember, this is yoga practice, not yoga perfect.
Yeah. It's like far too many people try and put perfection in the way of progress. And I, you know, I, that goes for business, it goes for content, it goes for sobriety, in all honesty. You know, I would rather you made some progress, that you did something, than you do nothing because you're not going to get it absolutely right or do it absolutely perfect.
Well, and that's why I was trying to go down that little rabbit hole. Because, like, say, for an example, if you're working with Duncan and you're working on your sobriety, and let's say you made a mistake, maybe you had that cocktail one night, you know, during your going through sobriety, it's not like you're a failure. It's like, no, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I really try and encourage people to see, that we sort of think of stopping as the moment that the car stopped, but actually it's not just one single moment. There's a lot that goes into that. You have to think about braking. You have to press the brake. The brakes have to activate. The friction has to take effect. You know, all of those things have to come together to actually create stop. So most people think of stopping as a single action, but it's not. It's an extended period. And you have to go through a thought process and you have to stop drinking. And sometimes that involves slipping up. Sometimes that takes a few attempts. Sometimes it takes a little while to get it right. But what you've got to realize is that failure is not fatal. You know, losing one does not mean you have lost the war. And if you don't believe me, just go and buy a book about the Second World War, because what you will find is that the Allies got absolutely trashed for the first 3 years. They lost every battle, but they didn't give up. And that, you know the way that particular conflict finished. So one failure is not fatal.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That is a nugget that I think everybody should try to get their heads around and get a full grasp on. Thank you for sharing that, Duncan.
That's my pleasure.
Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us on some of our other shows. And Duncan, I want to say thank you for being here, and thank you for virtually jumping across the pond to the United States to be on this show. Thank you very much.
It's absolutely a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now. Until next time, be amazing.
Thanks for tuning in to another empowering episode of Business Amplified with Kevin A. Dunlap.
If you found value in today's insights, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share the podcast.
Keep amplifying your business. And remember, your success journey is our inspiration.
Until next time on Business Amplified, go out there and make your business thrive.